Season 2, Lesson Number 3, Part 3 of How the Heck Do I Get the Right Nutrition Information for My Pet? Hello there, and welcome to my educational podcast all about pet nutrition. I am your animal nutrition wizard and podcast host, Trinity, and I'm here again today to drop some more helpful knowledge on you. I was hoping to publish this episode a little sooner, but I did just spend the last few weeks moving, and it took some time to get back up and running. So here I am. Well, I'm actually sitting, but that's fine. And I'm going to just do a quick recap since it's been a little bit of time from the last two episodes, and we'll do our A&W flashcard segment, and then we'll hop right into part three of Getting the Right Info series that we're doing right now. So just before we delve into all that, let's do our A&W flashcard. The A&W flashcard for this lesson is extrusion, namely, what is the definition of extrusion and how does it pertain to kibble? I'll give you a few seconds to think about it. Do you remember what it is from lesson 6 in season 1? If not, you'll get the answer at the end of the episode, and if you did remember or just happen to know it already, way to go, nutrition wizard in training. Now let's go over that brief recap. Recap time. We have learned about the different kinds of studies you might run across. Case studies, reviews, epidemiological studies, retrospective and prospective studies, third-person research, which is what I do and is what the bulk of pet food formulas are based on, and of course the top-tier heavy ringer, the randomized control studies. So we also talked about two incredibly important factors you must be aware of when reviewing studies, and those are validity and reliability. These are the questions one must ask themselves when determining the quality, efficacy, and usefulness of a study's conclusion. The results of many studies you'll come across will be compelling, but they must be both reliable and valid if you're going to be able to utilize that information responsibly. So now that we've covered all that ground, today is when I'm going to be going into more detail on what exactly a randomized control study is, how they're designed, what confounds are, and we'll go over some other important terminology that will help you understand quickly how a study must have been set up simply by looking at the name of the study. Randomized controlled studies, or randomized controlled trials, often abbreviated into the acronym RCT, is a study that is designed to randomly assign trial participants into either A, an experimental group, or B, a control group. Then, as the study is conducted, the only expected difference between the control and the experimental groups is the outcome variable being studied. Randomization, which is the term used when the participants in a study are randomly assigned to a group, can be any number of mechanisms used in assigning the participants of a trial into these different groups, with the expectation that these groups will not differ significantly in any way except for the treatment and outcome being studied in the trial. Essentially, researchers conducting the experiment will have chosen one factor to change for the experimental group, and they'll measure the outcome. The control group would not have the treatment, and this is to allow for a comparison. So I'll use an example that was given to me during one of my courses to help you kind of visualize this better and sort of bring it home. In this example, researchers are setting up an RCT to determine whether feeding mice mycotoxins, a type of toxic and potentially lethal mold that is known to grow in pet foods using grain ingredients, causes liver disease. They would gather participants, in this case mice, that are in similar condition and age, and then they'd house them under the same exact conditions with the same exact diet, with the exception of the mycotoxin added to the experimental group. They would divide these participants of similar age, condition, etc., living in the same conditions and on the same diet into their two groups, the experimental group and an control group. The researchers in this experiment would choose one factor and change it, In this case, the factor would be mycotoxins, and they'd be adding it to the diet of the experimental group only. They would then observe, measure, and record everything that happens next. The control group would not be fed the mycotoxins, again, because this allows for comparison. All the other factors, such as the species of the animal, what they're fed, how they're housed, their age, etc., should all be the same or constant as the experimental group, save for the one factor the researchers are studying. All these other factors that make both groups the same are called control variables, while the factor being changed, in this case the mycotoxin, is called the independent variable. The control variable is basically just the conditions that are constant in the study, such as housing, conditions, diet. And the independent variable is the factor that is changed in the study, in this case, the mycotoxins. Sometimes the control group will also receive a placebo, such as in drug trials. A placebo is a fake drug or pill that is basically just sugar or saline, which has no effect on the control group. The groups are not informed who is on the placebo and who is taking the real treatment, and this is called a blind study. This is essentially to further eliminate potential bias, which is one of the most troublesome and pervasive means of distorting study designs and conclusions, because we're human and we have biases. A randomized control study might also be blind. In the case of the study on mycotoxins affecting the mice's livers, the people who are feeding the mice and the people who collect and analyze the data are also unaware of who is getting the placebo and who is getting the drug. That is a double-blind study. If a study is double-blind, then neither the experimenters nor the participants know who's in the experimental group and who's in the control group. This is also a reliable way to help eliminate bias, such as from the researchers who are very excited about their hypothesis and they really want the outcome of their study to go a certain way, it prevents it from affecting the study's conclusion. It's probably safe to say that most animal nutrition studies are in fact double-blind, partly because it's pretty difficult to convey to the test animal that it is indeed being tested on and what it's being tested for. Now, a multi-armed study or trial compares several different experimental treatments, for example, against a control group, all within a single study. This is useful because only one control group is needed, meaning the number of participants on the control treatment is reduced, and this also allows for a fair head-to-head comparison of different treatments. It's likely this also significantly reduces costs and time involved in such studies, which are in fact very expensive, and this is why there aren't nearly as many randomized control studies as there are other less reliable and valid studies, such as epidemiological studies or case reviews. Something else researchers have to strive to eliminate from their studies are confounding factors or confounding variables, also sometimes just called confounds. Confounds are a third variable that might influence the results. In the case of the mouse study, the researchers, if they were to put all the white mice in the control group and all the gray mice into the experimental group, that would mean it's no longer a randomized controlled study. There would be two variables instead of one, and the participants were not placed into different groups at random. And instead of the only changing variable being mycotoxins, there's now a second variable, the confounding variable, which would be the phenotype of the mice. As a quick aside, the phenotype is the observable characteristics, so the ones that you can see that are genetic traits of an organism. So brown hair, blonde hair, green eyes, these are all phenotypes. They all have genotypes, which are genetics encoded in their DNA that you can't see that cause these phenotypes that you can see. And that is RCTs, or randomized control trials or studies, in a 101 style basic nutshell. And now, when you see that a study is a randomized, double-blind, multi-arm, placebo-controlled study, you'll understand what that means and why those things are helpful or important. As I mentioned before, scientists typically agree that RCTs are the gold standard when it comes to evaluating certain hypotheses, especially nutrition and drug trials. But regrettably, these studies actually tend to fall short when it comes to animal nutrition. That's because different breeds of dogs, for example, or dogs that are housed in very different conditions with different lifestyles or environments, tend to have very different results depending on the factor being studied. So the animals and the breeds, usually beagles, that are housed in a lab and used for animal nutrition studies might see very different outcomes from nutritional studies than the animals and breeds living in homes with us. Not only that, but in the past, and sometimes even now, dogs and cats were surgically altered or fed some sort of toxin or poison with the intent of damaging a particular organ for researchers to evaluate the response of that animal to certain nutrients or diets. And these results are still used to justify the formulation of many veterinary diets today, but it's unlikely that those results properly represent the progression of natural diseases and conditions in our dogs and the effect those nutrients and diets would truly have on them. And lastly, but certainly not least important, there is the issue of corporate bias, which will be the focus of our next lesson in this series. For now, let's end today's lesson with the answer on the backside of the A&W flashcard. The flashcard for today was extrusion. What is the definition and how does it pertain to kibble? The answer on the back is, extrusion is the process of pushing material through a die to create a shape. So it's exactly like what happens when you squeeze your bottle of toothpaste or when you push Play-Doh through a shaped object to create a star or a circle or another shape on the other side. Extrusion is the most common way that kibble is manufactured. All of the ingredients are mixed together into sort of dough and then they're pushed through a die plate to create a wafer-shaped or star-shaped or circular, etc., kibble on the other side. Did you already know the answer? Or do you have any questions about today's episode? Let me know in a Facebook comment on my page at facebook.com/animalnutritionwizard or reach out to me via my contact page on my website at animalnutritionwizard.org. Thank you guys so much for listening and learning with me today. I've had a lot of fun putting these episodes together and I'm absolutely delighted to have the time now with my move being finished to make more frequent lessons for you, and so plan to see the next lesson coming soon where I address one of the biggest issues to look out for when doing your pet nutrition research at home, and that's corporate bias. Now go ahead and feed those doggies and kitties like you mean it, because remember, nutrition is magic.
Hey listener, and wizard in training, I'd like to tell you a bit about the host of this podcast, Trinity Thresher. Trinity is an independently certified pet nutrition specialist and coach. She would like to invite you to visit her website at animalnutritionwizard.org, where you can schedule a consult with her or purchase a food analysis from one of her three comprehensive packages. Her credentials include 6 years' experience working under Dr. Katie Miller, DVM, maintained certifications from canine nutritionist Nina Liu and Dr. Jean Dodds, as well as educators Holly and Hugo, and several certifications from Dogs Naturally Pro courses created by Dr. Marion Smart. The Wizard performs ongoing study and dedicates much of her time to advancing her learning and understanding of biology, immunology, animal physiology, and nutrition. She provides coaching, consultations, guides, and free weekly Q&A sessions. Her ultimate goal is to create a certification program designed for members of the pet food industry that, once certified, would provide them with the Animal Nutrition Wizard's Seal of Approval, which could be labeled directly on packaging or on their website. This seal would be one of the best ways for pet owners to quickly recognize a food, treat, or supplement as safe and healthy and has met the standards of an independent third-party certifier. Optimal nutrition and the well-being of your pets is the sole focus of the Animal Nutrition Wizard. Her dream is to empower pet owners everywhere and create pet nutrition wizards out of every dog and cat owner. Your support is the driving force that helps to maintain and grow these goals and dreams. Thank you.